We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We go, episode 803 of the Al Galdi podcast. It is Thursday, April 11th, 2024. 2 weeks away are we from the 2024 NFL Draft's first round, which is on Thursday night, April 25th. 2 weeks away are we from finding out what the heck happens with the Commanders' number two overall pick in that 2024 draft. And wouldn't you know it, the final days of pre-draft visits for draft prospects to NFL teams will include the Commanders hosting LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels and North Carolina quarterback Drake May. The Commanders are saving the two guys who would appear to be the top two candidates to be taken by the team with that number two overall pick for the final days of pre-draft visits. April 17th is the final day for pre-draft visits. We on Tuesday night had reports that Jaden Daniels' pre-draft visit to the Commanders will happen this Monday and Tuesday, April 15th and 16th. We on Wednesday afternoon had a report from NFL insider Ian Rappaport of NFL Network and NFL.com that Drake May's pre-draft visit to the Commanders will happen this Tuesday and Wednesday, April 16th and 17th. So there is some overlap on Tuesday, April 16th. Will Daniels and May run into each other at the Commanders team facility in Ashburn, Virginia? If they do run into each other, will the encounter be cordial, perhaps even friendly, perhaps even warm? Or might the encounter be awkward? Might the encounter be cool? What if one guy just walked past the other, totally ignoring him, totally snubbing him? What if there is a snub between Daniels and May in Ashburn next week? All kinds of possibilities for next week. Hello and welcome to this Thursday installment of the Al Galdi podcast. Well, also on Wednesday was the release of the latest mock draft from ESPN NFL draft analyst Mel Kiper Jr. The mock came out on Wednesday morning, and Mel again had the Commanders taking Jaden Daniels at two. Quote, "I'm sticking with Daniels, whom I've projected to the Commanders in my three previous mock drafts. Why? I have him ranked higher than Drake May, parentheses, North Carolina, and J.J. McCarthy, parentheses, Michigan, and really like his fit in an offense designed by Cliff Kingsbury," end quote. Next segment, a great guest to discuss which quarterback the Commanders should take it to. Matt Manocharian, who is the Senior Vice President of Football and Data Analytics for Sports Info Solutions, and who is a former scout for the New Orleans Saints and Cleveland Browns. Matt is like the ultimate combination of analytics and scouting, and he has some very strong opinions on Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and J.J. McCarthy. Our quest to summon as many informed and intelligent opinions on what the Commander should do at two as possible brings us to Matt Manocharian. He's very good, and he'll be with us next segment, during which he'll also tell us a terrific story about the lengths to which he went to scout a player during Matt's time as a scout. Also on the show, I'll talk Nationals and Orioles. The Nats lost at the San Francisco Giants 7-1 on Wednesday, ending the Nats' three-game winning streak and denying the Nats a three-game sweep. But the O's won at the Boston Red Sox 7-5 on Wednesday night in a game in which the O's overcame a 5-0 six-inning deficit, and in a game in which the consensus number one prospect in baseball, Orioles second baseman slash shortstop Jackson Holliday, made his major league regular season debut. He, as the Orioles starting second baseman and number nine batter, went 0-for-4 with an RBI. A very big Wednesday for the O's. You can hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Email from Rob in Washington, D.C. on whether the Commanders should take Jaden Daniels with their number two overall pick in the 2024 draft. Writes Rob, am I the only one who feels like I'm in a slow motion nightmare trying to scream, but my mouth is mute? I'll explain. Witnessing the trend toward Jaden Daniels as the pick feels way too much like RG3. Number two overall pick, check. Heisman Trophy winner, check. Dual threat, check. Overbearing parent, check. Spindly and skinny Bambi, check. It's time that we ask ourselves, what would Dan Snyder do in this position? And then we should do the diametrical opposite. Dan would absolutely pick the sexiest available quarterback with the most immediate marketing potential and zero foresight regarding injury potential, consistency, etc. And that pick would be Daniels. If Josh Harris and company want to truly separate themselves from the past and exorcise every last one of the demons, the team needs to channel George Costanza's philosophy and just do the opposite of what Dan would do. Whatever quarterback in the draft embodies what Dan repelled the most should be the pick. And history tells us that the garlic to Dracula Dan would be a bland but effective quarterback like Brad Johnson, or you know who. Thank you for the email, Rob. And he did actually write, you know who. He did not write the actual name of you know who. Interesting way of looking at the Commanders' quarterback decision. Identify what the former lead owner of our team, Dan Snyder, would do, and then do the opposite. It's like Jerry told George on Seinfeld, if every instinct you have is wrong, then the opposite would have to be right.
Yeah, I should do the opposite. I should.
If every instinct you have is wrong, then the opposite would have to be right.
Yes, I will do the opposite.
Yes, if every instinct that Dan Snyder as Washington owner had was wrong, then the opposite would have to be right. Email from Yassine on the Commanders, the Orioles, and this podcast. Writes Yassine, first off, congratulations on the 800th episode of your podcast. What an accomplishment. And hopefully when episode 1000 happens, the Orioles win the World Series and the Commanders win the Super Bowl. Anyway, I attended the Orioles opening day. It was my first opening day despite going to more than a dozen games at Oriole Park at Camden Yards over the past 3 decades. The excitement and optimism were great due to the ownership change and coming off a 101 win season that resulted in the American League East title. Also, the game itself was as good as it gets thanks to the Orioles clobbering the Angels 11-3. It is unbelievable that the Orioles and Commanders officially have new owners within a 9-month span. These are great times for me as a Commanders slash Orioles fan. As to the Commanders, I like the new front office and I am getting a bit sold on Dan Quinn, but I have to watch real games this fall to fully evaluate the team. I hope with the draft later this month, the Commanders can overcome their own franchise curse and get the quarterback right finally with a number two overall pick. This franchise is snake bitten when it comes to drafting a quarterback at each round, with the exceptions of rounds 4 and 7, somehow, thanks to you know who and Gus Frerotte. All in all, drafting a quarterback is all about luck and circumstance, and the Commanders have not had those things in a very long time. Finally, on a personal note, can you please talk more about the Orioles on your podcast and stop putting the team toward the ends of your shows. Let's be honest, the Nationals are at best a 72-win team, and we all know that they're going to struggle this season because the Lerners refused to spend money on payroll despite getting the Masson dispute settled. I know that this is a DC sports podcast, but the Orioles are the dominant team, not only in Baltimore, but the entire Mid-Atlantic region, including the Washington, D.C. area. Therefore, the O's deserve more time and attention on your show. Trust me, this change will help you gain more subscribers to your podcast. Thank you for reading this email and keep going with your amazing shows and cheers to your 800th episode. Well, thank you very much for that, Yassine. These indeed are amazing times for those of us who are Combo Commanders Orioles fans. I myself am a Combo Commanders Orioles fan. I make no secret of that. And that each team has new ownership off decades of really bad ownership is incredible. 18 months ago, the notion of either team having new ownership seemed far-fetched. That both teams have new ownership is a dream, to say nothing of the O's having all of these great slash promising young players and the Commanders potentially about to load up on great slash promising young players via having six of the top 100 picks in the 2024 draft. As for where I put Orioles segments on this podcast, you know, I have wrestled with this issue. Should the Orioles segments come before the Nats segments, given that the O's are in a much better place than the Nats are? I, as last season went on, did make the change to doing the Orioles segments before the Nats segments, but I did not make that change until late in the regular season. If enough people want me to talk O's before I talk Nats, I'll make the change earlier this season. But always remember the following about this podcast. Timestamps. This podcast, unlike so many other podcasts, provides timestamps, so you can jump right to the segments that most interest you. Now, we always recommend listening to every segment of every show because there are pearls of wisdom in every segment, but I, in doing this podcast, recognize that not every listener is interested in every team that I talk about. So I do the timestamps so that if you want to pick and choose what you listen to, you can. So while I do put a lot of thought into the order of the segments, the order doesn't matter so much if you go by the timestamps. But yeah, if enough people tell me that they care far more about the O's than the Nats, then I'm more than open to making the change to doing the O's before the Nats when I talk about both teams on a show. I will push back on two things that Yassine said. The Masson dispute has not been fully settled. It is more settled than it was a few years ago, but the situation still is not fully settled. And B, the Lerners not spending more this past offseason is not what will determine how the Nats do this season. How the Nats' young players and highly touted prospects do this season will determine how the Nats do this season. I may be in the minority on this, but I don't think that the Lerners not spending much this past offseason was the wrong way to go. The time for ownership to spend is when a team is about to bust out of a rebuild or is in win-now mode. We hope that the Nats are about to bust out of their rebuild, but that is far from a certainty, and the Nats still need to determine what they have and what they do not have in terms of the rebuild. So letting this thing breathe more before spending big is not some outrageous way to go, especially given how often spending big does not work. And if you want a big event that you're planning to work, to be a hit, get with Catering by Uptown. It is the best catering service in the DMV. Visit cateringbyuptown.com and make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. If you are planning a wedding, a party, a corporate event, whatever, you want great service, but you also want a great price. Well, Catering by Uptown provides both. Catering by Uptown is a family business, and it specializes in handling everything so that you don't have to. Catering by Uptown understands that special events deserve to be celebrated in style. Catering by Uptown takes care of every detail so that you can enjoy your event. From putting together and executing a menu, to picking linens, to selecting an excellent florist, Catering by Uptown is committed to meeting your needs and exceeding your expectations. Great service, amazing cuisine, and reliability are the foundation of what makes Catering by Uptown one of the most referred caterers throughout Maryland, Washington, D.C., and Northern Virginia. Visit cateringbyuptown.com and make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. That's cateringbyuptown.com and make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, please consider following the podcast if you're not already doing that. Following the podcast is free. If you have an iPhone, you can follow the podcast simply by tapping the plus sign in the upper right corner on the page listing the recent episodes of this podcast. The discussion of what the Commanders' quarterback decision via their number two overall pick in the 2024 NFL draft should be shines a spotlight on the two general ways to evaluate football players and athletes in general, analytics and scouting. We on this podcast have had plenty of guests who've talked about North Carolina quarterback Drake May versus LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels versus Michigan quarterback J.J. McCarthy from an analytics perspective. And we on this podcast have had plenty of guests who've talked about May versus Daniels versus McCarthy from a scouting perspective. The truth, of course, is that an NFL team does not have to choose between analytics and scouting. An NFL team should embrace both analytics and scouting. And I'm very pleased to welcome back to the Al Galdi podcast right now a man who is a perfect example of blending analytics and scouting, Matt Manocharian. Matt is the Senior Vice President of Football and Data Analytics for Sports Info Solutions, which is a major sports analytics company. Matt also is a former scout for the New Orleans Saints and Cleveland Browns. So he is a man who combines the two worlds of analytics and scouting as well as anyone. You can follow Matt on X at Matt Mano, M-A-N-O. Matt, it's great to talk to you again. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, great to talk to you. I always laugh when I hear or read people try to make analytics versus scouting an either-or proposition. It's not. An NFL team can and should excel in both. You have such a unique and healthy perspective on the issue, given your background. How do you frame the discussion of analytics and scouting?
The opposite way that the internet frames it. So for me, I actually view my role at SIS as a translator. I translate between the jocks and the nerds, the football and the data, the scouts and the analysts, however you want to say it. I live right on that intersection of the Venn diagram. And all I try to do is smash them together as often as I can, because I think that they tend to separate, right? Just like we see on the internet, the scouts tend to go into their silo, talk to each other. The analysts tend to go in their silo and talk to each other. And then you have people talking past each other when they do communicate from one side to another. Well, my whole thing is, I don't care about your analysis if you're just scouting. I don't care about your analysis if you're just looking at data. I really think the only time something interesting happens is when we bring these together and when we're really analyzing the correct data that comes from scouts and people that are experts in what's going on. And the scouts buy into the way that the algorithms are being created because it resonates with them. So it's all about bringing this together. And what I find at the end of the day is a lot of what we do, well, I think people like to try to position it as like the analytics coming to take over scouting. That's hogwash as far as I'm concerned. It's the entire purpose is to help empower scouts to make better decisions, to help the decision makers understand what they're doing at a higher level. And that makes the sport better. It makes the game better. And I think it's a beautiful thing when people just aren't so afraid of it.
Let us get to the perceived top quarterbacks in the 2024 draft. Sports Info Solutions has teamed with another great entity, the 33rd team, for a 2024 NFL Draft Big Board. It has USC's Caleb Williams as the QB1, North Carolina's Drake May as the QB2, LSU's Jaden Daniels as the QB3, Washington's Michael Penix Jr. as the QB4, and Michigan's J.J. McCarthy as the QB5. Would you endorse the Commanders taking May at 2, or would you deviate from that big board?
I feel like there's a pretty big gulf, in my opinion, between May and Daniels and McCarthy. McCarthy, I think, is more sort of in the Penix, Nix range. I think he's closer to those guys than he is to these top guys. When you look at May versus Daniels, there are a few different factors that come to mind. I prefer May as a prospect because when I look at May, I see somebody who has very good size, very good arm talent, both arm strength and the ability to accurately locate the ball, especially down the field. I know we can all look at some YouTube videos of him spraying a couple passes here and there, but go watch that Wyoming film of Josh Allen and tell me if you see anything that looks similar there. So what I love about him is his ability to get the ball down the field, down the seams accurately and really on a line. You see him make throws that a lot of people have to put up into the air. He's able to really make what we call a level two throw and kind of not miss the cutoff man, so to speak, in the way that he's putting less air under the ball. So the special arm, the size, the athleticism that he brings to the table. And you're talking about a guy who's played he's 3 years removed from high school. So he's young. He's played a bunch of football because he grew up playing sports. But at the same time, we've only saw 20 games of him in college. There's a lot more growth, I think, that can be expected when you look at May. The most similar prospect to him that I've seen in the last few years is Justin Herbert. That doesn't mean that he's going to be Herbert, but in the past where I would have looked at a Herbert or an Allen and I said, I'm just not comfortable with their accuracy. What I've come to learn from these quarterbacks over time is that when the arm is there and you have the ability to develop these players, that accuracy can actually be quote unquote learned a little bit. So I love May because I love the upside there, though I do recognize he's a bit younger. That's part of the reason why I like him above Daniels, because Daniels is somebody who's been around the block a little bit. We saw him perform well younger in his career, then have some struggles. And then obviously, what he did this year was statistically at the top of all college football. Really good athlete. But I think that this is more of a player who's a one or two read quarterback and then bring it down. So I think you kind of get a high floor with a player like that, right? Because of the athleticism and because, you're going to take your shots and then you're going to live to see another down. So you get him in the right position. I think he can be a good player, but I don't think he has the upside of a Drake May based on the arm talent that May has combined with, I think, the remaining meat on the bone in terms of development.
So I agree with you. I like Drake May over Jaden Daniels and J.J. McCarthy, though I do like a lot about both Daniels and McCarthy. Now, a criticism of May that I'm sure you're familiar with is that he's guilty of missing too many layups, that he's off on too many underneath passes. What do you make of that criticism of May?
When I was taught by Sean Payton to evaluate quarterbacks, he said that the most important thing was that the quarterback can make the ball go where he wants the ball to go. And that's true. That is patently true. And Coach Payton was right about that. So throughout my years, whenever I've looked at that sort of thing, I think it requires a lot of kind of double clicking and checking in to see what's causing this issue. Does it appear to be correctable? Is there a reason that's behind it? I think what ended up happening with May this year is their offense really fell apart from one year to the next. It was a weird system that they ran. Again, really similar stuff to what we saw with Herbert in his last year in college. And I think two things happened. Number one, some hero ball, right? When he started trying to play hero ball, it made some of the ugliest plays that he had in the season. The other one is, I think he started rushing himself. I think he was looking to get the ball out of his hand so quickly sometimes that I think he was just completely breaking down in mechanically. So what do I expect from there? I don't expect it to be Drew Brees on the next level because Drew Brees never showed that. So I don't have any reason to believe that. But if you look at somebody like, again, I'm going to go back to Josh Allen here, you can see evidence of somebody who, for similar reasons, might have had some of these bad habits. But once he got into the NFL system, once he developed a little bit, grew into his body, got a little bit more clarity about where the reads are in the offenses, I think all of a sudden you can find guys that settle down and – you know, what do I really care about? It's not missing the easy throws. It's the ability to make the difficult throws. Because I don't know very many quarterbacks that can throw a 25-yard out the way that Drake May can, or that can put the bang eight post right on the guy's front shoulder pad. These are the sorts of things. And also the ability to throw off platform, really the arm strength alone to be able to do it, which makes you think of some of the best quarterbacks in the NFL these days. Those are all the things. I think it's upside. But I'd be lying to you if I didn't say there was any risk when you're talking about somebody who's had lapses in accuracy.
You view Jaden Daniels as having a higher floor than Drake May has. Do you view May as having a higher ceiling than Daniels has? Or do you more view May as being more likely to reach his ceiling than Daniels is to reach his?
I think May has a higher ceiling. I think Jaden Daniels can be a win-with quarterback on the NFL level. I think he can be good. I think he can be part of the reason why you win games. If things go well for Drake May, his upside is Justin Herbert. And to me, now you're talking about one of the top five players in the NFL. So to me, that's what we call win because of. And I think Drake May has some of that win because of potential, as does Caleb Williams, of course.
We're talking about the Commanders' quarterback decision via their number 2 overall pick in the 2024 NFL Draft with Matt Medocherian, who is the Senior Vice President of Football and Data Analytics for Sports Info Solutions and is a former scout for the New Orleans Saints and Cleveland Browns. Regarding J.J. McCarthy, you're not particularly high on him. Others are. What goes into your take on McCarthy?
Yeah, McCarthy for me is the type of quarterback that you can talk yourself into in a lot of ways. Young, he's got the youth on his side, kind of like May. Good starting experience. He's been a leader. They win the championship. There's sort of good athletic traits there. When you look at the arm strength, you look at the athleticism, things like that. But I think that if you're talking yourself into him, you got to admit that you're doing that. Because when you look at the performance on the film, it's not in the same category as any of these five quarterbacks, not just the three quarterbacks. It's not in the same category as any of these five quarterbacks in terms of what they put on the film this past year. He's not a part of the reason why his team was winning games. Some good third down performance, sure, I'll give him that. But within the context of their offense and what they had going there, it's a little bit part of the reason why you ding Daniels a little bit. It's like the situation is so good around you. You only just have to fit in and do your part. And I think that's all he did. So can we punish him for only doing what he was asked of, what was asked of him? Maybe, maybe not. But when you look at Caleb Williams and his ability to just make wizard-like plays, when you look at Drake May and the upside where you can see the vision of how he becomes Justin Herbert like, or Jaden Daniels, where you've got wow athleticism and you've got somebody who led the nation in terms of all of his productivity stats this year. McCarthy's none of that stuff. He's young. He's exciting. I'm sure when you get him on the board, he's great. I think that's part of the reason why some of the love comes out late in the process for these guys, because as you talk to the players more, you can be a riser if you're very good when you're on the board like that. But ultimately, I see how he's developed into a first round pick that if you have the right situation, you can kind of like talk yourself into him. But I think he's more like Kenny Pickett as a prospect than he is like one of these true, I expect you to become a high-end starting quarterback in the NFL type players.
Sports Info Solutions has so many good stats. Do you have specific stats that you like to look at for projecting collegiate quarterbacks as NFL quarterbacks?
Yeah, so there are tons of stats, and different things project differently. And I'd say as a general rule, trying to look at one stat and say he's going to be good or he's going to be bad is more difficult. But looking at the relationships of stats can tell you pretty strongly what type of player you expect them to be. Guys that like to push the ball down the field, they like to push the ball down the field. Guys that are more dink and dunk, short game stuff, even when they change systems, you see some of these traits that people carry with them. One that gets some publicity on the NFL level, especially with like the fantasy football and betting community, will be quarterback accuracy and how NFL quarterbacks, when they're in a clean pocket as opposed to under pressure, their accuracy tends to project forward more accurately, you know, what we can expect of it. What's interesting, what we find with college football is that the same relationship doesn't exist. In fact, it's the under pressure plays that tend to project a little bit better to the NFL. And it's one of these things like, doesn't make sense on the surface until you start to think about it a little bit more, and you can see how that happens, right? Because in the NFL, if it's clean, yeah, it makes sense that you're going to be, you think about Jared Goff. When it's clean, he's slinging the ball all over the field. That's going to be who he is consistently when it's clean. When you look at a college quarterback, the ability to throw with a clean pocket in college, it does not necessarily translate to being able to play in the NFL. Things get a lot faster and a lot tighter there. However, the ability to play under pressure, to have things be sped up on you a little bit, that does translate. So it's sort of interesting, maybe not in terms of this guy's good, this guy's bad, but in terms of what we can expect to be similar or different from one level to another.
That's interesting. As you know, the Commanders' quarterback decision via their number two overall pick will not just be about Drake May, Jaden Daniels, J.J. McCarthy, and who knows who else as players. The decision also will be about these guys as people. Does each guy have a high football IQ? Is each guy a hard worker? Is each guy a good teammate? Is each guy accountable? Does each guy truly love football to where he'll truly be committed to being an NFL player? Given your time as a scout for the Saints and Browns, how does a team go about trying to figure out who draft prospects are as people?
Yeah, talk about an inexact science. This is the most important job of area scouts. So when you divide the country up and you say, you know, for me, when I was with the Browns, for example, it was the Northeast. So it was every school from Virginia to Maine. Basically going up the coast that way. I'm responsible for every draft eligible player. And you go from school to school, going in there. Yeah, you're watching film. Yeah, you're evaluating the players, but you can get a lot of that stuff on film. You can get other eyeballs on the players. The thing that's truly unique about being on the inside of the NFL and having that sort of access is that you can talk to the coaches. You can talk to the strength coach, is always going to give you a really good idea of the work ethics of the player. You can talk to the medical staff to understand more about that sort of background. You can talk to their academic advisors to understand if somebody's creating problems in the classroom, if they're a good student, start to learn about their habits and things like that. So I can tell you, when I was on the road, there was one player that I camped out in where I found out was his favorite bar, and basically spied on him, for lack of a better word, trying to understand who this player was. And he got into a bar fight at the bar that somebody tipped me off that was a bar that he would show up at, and he liked to cause scenes. So that one was clear as day. A lot of times it's harder because during the season, you don't actually get to talk to the players so much. It's the coaches. It's all that kind of stuff. And then when you get to bowl games, like the all-star games, the combine, the pro days, and you can actually talk to them a little bit more, by then they're being prepped and they're a little bit more guarded about how they're trying to present themselves. So it's an inexact science. It's tricky. When Aaron Hernandez happened, I went through a gang identification training at one point. They had us identify gang tattoos. And I said, I think I'm out of my depth here a little bit. you're trying to, and you're bringing in psychologists and things like that as well. One thing that's come up recently has been Navy SEAL training. People that are in that sort of part of the world, they've actually come over to sports a lot to really understand what high performance looks like. So you're trying to do everything you can to understand both the personal character and the football character of each of these players.
Wow. Staking out a draft prospect at a bar. That is dedication. Final question. The hit rate on first round quarterbacks is not very high. 30 to 40%, depending on how you define a hit. How realistic is it for NFL teams to be appreciably better at hitting on first round quarterbacks? And how could NFL teams be appreciably better at hitting on first round quarterbacks?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think part of the issue is that playing quarterback is very difficult. So no matter what, when you start looking at, okay, the best of this bunch, whether or not they make it, sometimes the best quarterbacks coming out of college, they're not good enough. There are quarterback classes, heck, maybe within the past couple of years where you might say, man, none of these guys might be really what we were hoping for. And it's a hard position to play. The things that I think can help are more process-based evaluations, more trying to make sure that there's consensus about the picks. The things that hurt is when you draft quarterbacks too early and you put them in situations. Like, I think McCarthy, if he's lucky, he goes mid to late first round and gets with a team that can support him and can win with him. If he gets into, if he goes to the Patriots, I don't know where you start with that. You just pray that he's Tom Brady and call it a day. So I think that's part of it. The other thing is not just the environment in that sense, but also the environment in terms of developing quarterbacks. I think that is a skill that is maybe the most undervalued asset in all of football, right? The sort of Sean McVay skill set of having these quarterback whisperer type people. Like, if I get with Shanahan, all of a sudden I'm going to be good. Tua goes from a bust to a success because he gets the right coaching in there that can sprinkle the magic dust on him. So the other side of it too is there still is a lot of old school resistance to some of these things that have been proven to be better environments to perform in as a quarterback. And it's still very hit or miss whether you get into one of those good environments.
So true. Great perspective. Matt Manocherian, Senior Vice President of Football and Data Analytics for Sports Info Solutions and a former scout for the New Orleans Saints and Cleveland Browns. Matt, thank you and all the best.
Yeah, thanks for having me and good luck with the draft.
Thank you. We need all of the luck that we can get. And if you are a Commanders fan and you are on Instagram, you need to be following at WSH on the daily. With everything happening with the Commanders, make sure that you're listening to this podcast. And if you're on Instagram, make sure that you're following at WSH on the daily. WSH on the daily just started in 2021, and it has nearly 27,000 followers. The page is growing at a rapid rate, and the page is what its title suggests, daily. The page is updated every day, news, notes, reports, photos, graphics. WSH on the daily is a page that properly sources and vets its news and information and doesn't just post anything that anyone says. WSH on the daily responds to every single DM. WSH on the daily is a page at which you can have fun. And WSH on the daily always has a great fresh look. If you are on Instagram, check out at WSH on the daily and check out at WSH on the daily's online shop, WSHonthedaily.com. Some outstanding gear, shirts, hoodies, excellent material, modern looks. So for smart, informative, fun, and engaging Commanders content, check out at WSH on the daily on Instagram. And for great merch, visit WSHonthedaily.com. Well, no three-game sweep for the Nationals. They, on Wednesday, were denied a three-game sweep at the San Francisco Giants via a 7-1 loss, ending the Nats' three-game winning streak. The Nats for this 2024 MLB regular season now are 5-7. The Nats in this game scored just one run, totaled just four hits, worked just to two walks, and went 0-4 with runners in scoring position. The Nats so far in this regular season, 28 runs over five wins, but just 18 runs over seven losses. The Giants' starting pitcher on Wednesday, Jordan Hicks, one run in six innings. The lone offensive bright spot for the Nats was Joey Gallo. He is the Nats' starting first baseman and number four batter, went 1-for-3 with a solo homer and a walk. Gallo in the Nats' one-run second had a leadoff full-count homer to right field for a 1-0 Nats lead, and Gallo in the top of the fourth drew a walk. Joey Gallo, so far with the Nats, is living up to his reputation as a three true outcome batter: home runs, walks, and strikeouts. He, in this regular season, has the following slash line: batting average of 179, but an on-base percentage of 319, and a slugging percentage of 487. That right there is Joey Gallo. Also, with the Nats offense on Wednesday, their starting catcher was Drew Millis. The Nats on Wednesday morning announced having recalled Millis from AAA Rochester. This as the corresponding roster move to optioning pitcher Yoan Adone to Rochester. Adone was the Nats starting pitcher for their previous game, the 5-3 win at the Giants late night on Tuesday night. The Nats on Tuesday afternoon announced having recalled Adone from Rochester as the corresponding roster move to placing starting pitcher Josiah Gray on the 15-day injured list, retroactive to April 6th, with a right elbow slash right forearm flexor strain. Gray was supposed to be the Nats starting pitcher late night on Tuesday night. It's unclear who will be taking Gray's spot in the rotation while he's out. I hope that the Nats promote starting pitcher Jackson Rutledge back to the majors, but we'll see. Kibert Ruiz was not feeling well on Wednesday, so Drew Millis got called up, and he was the Nats starting catcher. He is their number eight batter, went 1-for-3 with a bunt single, and he then had a stolen base. Millis in the top of the third had a leadoff first pitch bunt single on a bunt that died between home plate and the pitcher's mound, and he then had a steal of second base. So how about that? A starting catcher with a bunt single and a stolen base, and in the same inning. And then the Nats, after the game, optioned Millis back to Rochester. Manager Davey Martinez, during his post-game session with reporters on Wednesday evening, said that the Nats will need another pitcher on their major league active roster for their next game, which is late night on Friday night, game one of a three-game series at the Oakland A's. The Nats' starting pitcher on Wednesday was Patrick Corbin, and he had an outing that in so many ways captures his decline since his first season with the Nats. This season is Corbin's age 34 season and the sixth and final season of the six-year, $140 million contract that the Nats signed him to as a free agent in December 2018. He was very good in the Nats' 2019 World Series championship season, but he has been bad ever since. And the number one reason for him being bad has been him giving up too much contact due to not generating enough strikeouts. If you had to boil down the decline of Patrick Corbin to one thing, that's it right there. Him giving up too much contact due to not generating enough strikeouts. Sure enough, Corbin, in this 7-1 loss at the Giants on Wednesday, was charged with 7 runs in 5 2/3 innings. He gave up a whopping 11 hits, which were comprised of a triple, a double, and 9 singles. He recorded just 2 strikeouts. He did issue no walks, and he did throw a good number of strikes. He over 85 pitches, threw 58 strikes versus just 27 balls. But think about that for a moment. Corbin had a strikes to balls ratio of better than 2-1. Again, 58 strikes versus just 27 balls. And yet he still generated just 2 strikeouts over 5 2/3 innings. His ability to generate strikeouts has like evaporated. And so he gives up a lot of contact. And when you do that, you fall victim to the variance of the batted ball. The Nats bullpen on Wednesday was good. Two Nats relievers officially combined for 2 1/3 scoreless innings. Derek Law officially tossed 1 1/3 scoreless innings, though he to the first batter he faced gave up a pinch two-out RBI infield single by Maryland product, Lamont Wade Jr., on a slow grounder to shortstop C.J. Abrams, who did make a throw home to get the third out, but that happened after the run had scored. This capped the Giants a 2-run 6. Law did then toss a perfect bottom of the 7th, and Tanner Rainey tossed a perfect bottom of the 8th. Rainey has been relegated to mop-up duty at this point as he tries to find his way back from Tommy John surgery that he underwent in August 2022. No game for the Nats on Thursday. Next up for them is a 3-game series at the Oakland A's. Game 1 Friday night at 9:40. Jake Irvin will be the Nats starting pitcher. Game 2 Saturday afternoon at 4:07. Mackenzie Gore will be the Nats starting pitcher. And Game 3 Sunday afternoon at 4:07. Trevor Williams will be the Nats starting pitcher. So I, for years during the Orioles' lengthy rebuild, their total teardown, all in on analytics rebuild, used a phrase. That phrase was pain now, pleasure later. And I implored Orioles fans to keep that phrase in mind, to say that phrase when the going got especially tough. Pain now, pleasure later. The pain was extreme. The pain was lengthy. But the pain ended with the 2022 season, which was when the pleasure began. And we on Wednesday got the latest installment of the pleasure. The O's on Wednesday morning officially promoted the consensus number one prospect in baseball, second baseman slash shortstop Jackson Holliday, to the majors. And the O's on Wednesday night overcame a 5-0 6-inning deficit to win at the Boston Red Sox 7-5 in Game 2 of a 3-game series. This off a 7-1 win at the Red Sox on Tuesday afternoon as the O's, Joe Angel, again, were in the win column.
And the Orioles, again, in the win column.
That is correct, Joe. The win column. The O's in this 2024 MLB regular season now are 7-4. Jackson Holliday. He now is in the majors. The wait is over. The O's on Wednesday morning announced that they had selected the contract of Holliday, and the surrounding items with this really were something. First of all, so much excitement, but the O's in making this announcement said that Holliday would wear number 7, making him the first Orioles player at the major league level to wear number 7 since second baseman Billy Ripken in 1988, and making Holliday the first Orioles player or coach to wear number 7 at the major league level since third base coach Cal Ripken Sr. in 1992. Number 7 had been this sacred number for the O's, and still is a sacred number for the O's. Legendary Orioles shortstop slash third baseman Cal Ripken Jr. He, in a post on X on Wednesday morning, said that his family was, quote, thrilled, end quote, that Holliday would, quote, be wearing dad's number 7, end quote. So Jackson Holliday got the endorsement from Cal Ripken Jr. Also, the corresponding roster move to the O's selecting the contract of Holliday was them designating outfielder slash second baseman Tony Kemp for assignment. Well, Kemp on Wednesday afternoon on X put up a very classy post in which he wished Holliday well. Quote, in the fall of 2010, our college had a series against the Longhorns for a 3-game set. Our hitting coach at the time was Josh Holliday, and his brother, Matt, brought his kid to our early practice. I remember watching his son at @J_Holliday7 with a sweet lefty swing. Go get him, kid. End quote. What a gracious, total high road message from Tony Kemp. I love that. Jackson Holliday in this 7-5 win at the Red Sox on Wednesday night was the Orioles starting second baseman and number 9 batter. He went 0-for-4 with an RBI. He and the Orioles, a 3-run 6, had an RBI ground out to cut the Orioles' deficit to 5-3. But look, Jackson Holliday has superstar written all over him. The O's took him with the number one overall pick in the 2022 MLB draft out of a high school in Oklahoma. He is the number one prospect in baseball per MLB pipeline. This season is just his age 20 season. He is the son of former Major League outfielder Matt Holliday. The O's on March 22nd announced a number of roster moves, including the cuts of four of the team's top seven prospects per MLB pipeline at the time. Among the players reassigned to minor league camp was Jackson Holliday. This was controversial, and a lot of Orioles fans were not happy about this. O's executive vice president and general manager Mike Elias, he in a session with reporters on March 22nd, cited Holliday's lack of familiarity with playing second base and his limited experience against upper-level left-handed pitchers as primary reasons for him not beginning the 2024 regular season at the major league level. Well, Holliday, over 10 games with AAA Norfolk this season, had an OPS of 1,077, including going 4-for-10 against left-handed pitching. Now, the service time angle has come up a bunch with Jackson Holliday, and understandably so. The service time issue is a complicated issue. I was never against the O's not having Jackson Holliday at the major league level to begin the regular season for service time purposes. I know that you're not supposed to say stuff like that, but the service time issue is a big issue. And if a team, by manipulating the service time rules, can gain an extra season of team control of a player, why not do that? I mean, it's pretty foolish not to take advantage of the rules. But the rules have been altered here. So consider this. Holliday was called up to the majors on April 10th. The O's only needed to wait until April 13th to promote Holliday to the majors and drastically improve the chance of gaining that extra season of team control. But the O's did not do this. So why didn't the O's wait the extra few days? Well, the ultra-complicated Prospect Promotion Incentive, PPI, in the current collective bargaining agreement between Major League Baseball and the MLB Players Association stipulates that a player who has rookie eligibility begins a regular season with 60 days or fewer of service time and is included on at least two of three preseason top 100 prospects lists. Those put out by Baseball America, ESPN, and MLB Pipeline will get credited with a full year of service time if the player finishes in the top two in the voting for Rookie of the Year in his league, regardless of when the player was promoted to the majors. So there is that. The O's could have waited until after April 13th, but still had Jackson Holliday get credit for a full year of service time. But there's another aspect of the PPI, and that is this. The PPI eligible players team can earn a draft pick between the first and second rounds of an MLB draft if the player earns a true year of service time and wins Rookie of the Year or finishes in the top three of the voting for MVP or Cy Young for his league for any of his pre-arbitration seasons. So as I understand the ultra-complicated PPI rules, the O's needed to have Holliday up before April 13th in order to be eligible for the draft pick. So that would explain why the O's did not wait until April 13th. But Jackson Holliday is the latest high-level prospect drafted by Mike Elias during his time as Orioles executive vice president and general manager to make the majors. The O's hired Elias in November 2018. The Orioles lineup on Wednesday night featured Gunnar Henderson as the starting shortstop and number one batter. The O's took him in the second round of the 2019 MLB draft. Adley Rutschman as the starting catcher and number two batter. The O's took him with the number one overall pick in the 2019 MLB draft. Colton Cowser as the starting left fielder and number seven batter. The O's took him with the number five overall pick in the 2021 MLB draft. Jordan Westberg as the starting third baseman and number eight batter. The O's took him with the number 30 overall pick in the 2020 MLB draft, and Jackson Holliday as the starting second baseman and number 9 batter. The O's took him with the number 1 overall pick in the 2022 MLB draft. And Westberg and Couser came up big for the O's in this game as the O's overcame a 5-0 six-inning deficit. The O's in this game, 7 runs, 9 hits, 5 walks, did go just 3 for 14 with runners in scoring position, and did strike out 11 times. But Jordan Westberg went 2 for 3 with a 3-run homer and a double. He ended Orioles a 3-run 6th, had a double down the left field line. And he ended Orioles a 4-run 7th, had a go-ahead 2-out 3-run home run to left center field over the Green Monster for a 7-5 Orioles lead, despite having been down in the count at 1.02. The home run went a projected 432 feet per StatCast. This was O's manager Brandon Hyde during his postgame session with reporters on Wednesday night on Jordan Westberg.
The way he swung the bat tonight, I mean, that was a huge hit for us, two huge hits for us. Played well at third base. He's starting to get comfortable, I think, in the big leagues, and he's taking really good at bats. So we had a pretty young team out there tonight, and a bunch of guys did really well.
Yes, they did. And Colton Couser, he on Wednesday night went 1 for 4 with a 2-run single and a walk. And he went 1 for 1 on stolen bases. Couser in the Orioles, a 3-run 6th, had a 2-run opposite field single to left field to cut the Orioles' deficit to 5-2. Now, the Orioles' starting pitcher on Wednesday night, Cole Irvin, did not do well. He is the Orioles' number 5 starter. He made just his 2nd start of this regular season, and he was not good. He allowed 5 runs in 5 innings. He gave up 7 hits, a 2-run homer, and 6 singles. He issued 3 walks, so recorded 4 strikeouts. He threw 78 pitches, 48 strikes versus 30 balls. But the Orioles' bullpen on Wednesday night was great. 3 Orioles relievers combined for 4 scoreless innings with 9 strikeouts. This was dominance. Mike Baumann, he tossed a scoreless bottom of the 6th with 3 swinging strikeouts. Keegan Aiken tossed a 2 scoreless and hitless innings with 4 strikeouts. And Craig Kimbrell tossed a perfect bottom of the 9th with 2 swinging strikeouts for the save. A really nice come-from-behind win for the O's to cap a really big day. Game 3 for the O's at the Red Sox Thursday night at 7:10. Grayson Rodriguez will be the Orioles starting pitcher. And that will do it for you and me for now. Keep the feedback coming. You can hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Friday show, episode 804. We'll have much more on the Commanders. Also on Friday show, I'll talk Capitals and Orioles. The Caps are at the Buffalo Sabres Thursday night at 7. The O's on Thursday night at 7:10 have game 3 of their 3-game series at the Boston Red Sox. Have a great rest of your Thursday, and I'll talk to you on Friday.
Yeah, I should do the opposite. I should.
If every instinct you have is wrong, then the opposite would have to be right.
Yes, I will do the opposite.